During Memorial Day at Lowe's, shop household must-haves for less. Save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Grill to chef up something special. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep things fresh. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 20. This week, we had a special guest, Jim Clementi, and Kathy Canning Mello from The Real Crime Profile join the podcast for a wide-spanning conversation and an accidental deep dive into the Delphi murders. I absolutely love this week's episode, and Bob, Jan, and I are here to discuss it all. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
No, other than, I always tell you guys, the Underestimated just started. Well, for us right now, it'll be tomorrow, but for you guys on Wednesday this week, the next group is starting their series. This one is on the Kim Larrow case, who is a missing person from right here in Michigan. That group starts their first episode on Wednesday, their second episode on Friday, and it has a tie-in with serial killer Arthur Rehm. Super interesting. This is the group that had their stuff all done and then completely threw it out and started over and rewrote and redid everything. And it sounds really good. So new series. And that's the last group. And then it will then circle back to one, the Brandy Peltz case again, back to that one again. So if you're listening to Underestimated, that's what you got going on there. New group up. Other than that, yeah, no updates on anything that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure we got a lot to talk about this episode because, yeah, I mean, my conversation with Jim and Kathy did not go, that was, as you guys heard, it was, we were like, hey, we're here. Let's sit down and chat. And then we were like, we'll just figure it out on the fly. And then, yeah, there was that moment where I'm like, oh, yeah, you guys were talking about Delphi. And then it led to, I think, 45 minutes of conversation more about that. I know we got a lot of comments on it. So first and foremost, what'd you guys think about the episode? Any thoughts or theories, comments, questions from you guys?
JV,
that's
go
the
ahead.
Thing that I say at the beginning of a podcast every week.
Zach, why don't you go first?
It was really nice to hear Jim and Kathy. I'm new to Kathy. I don't listen to Real Crime Profile. I have in the past, but I haven't listened to it recently. So it was nice to get to know them a little bit and to have Jim back around. The Nancy Guthrie stuff was pretty interesting because I have not followed that at all. I mean, I know the little bit that I saw through social
media.
Yeah, I was kind
of in the same boat.
But I did not pay attention to it at all. So that was really fascinating for me to understand that there's a lot more going on there than what I would have known. I know that there's a ton of listeners that are probably well versed on that case, but I have no idea. But to hear Jim's thoughts on it was really nice because it was just a case that I don't know anything about. And I could go on to Delphi. I know we're going to talk about Delphi. I'll get to the Delphi stuff when we get to the Delphi stuff.
Okay. What do you think, Janet?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I whenever this conversation, whenever this topic comes up, I sort of, my stomach does a little flip because it's so controversial and people have very, very, very strong feelings about it. And I just knew that, I just knew that there was going to be some stuff that sort of stirred up about this. And in particular, some things that, sometimes people who think maybe that when we're making a point, we play a little bit loose with facts as we understand them, or maybe we weren't planning on talking about something. And so when we talk about stuff off the cuff, if we get something wrong and, even if we correct ourselves, like it's just something I've been talking about this a lot on the podcast lately. And I recognize that and I know that. And I'm sorry if it's become redundant, but I'm just really aware of how polarizing so much of true crime is. And I just really wish, and I'm trying to do my part to turn the temperature down a little bit. And so I'm just trying to keep an open mind for people who are, you know, hearing what you're saying and finding it really fascinating, for people who are hearing what you're saying and really isolating things that maybe aren't accurate, potentially not as accurate, or were sort of mentioned, but maybe don't totally line up with like what was revealed in the trial. And also very aware that, like, I also feel like much of what it means to be alive in the world right now, like, you're also in really bad shape if you don't take a strong opinion. Like, I feel like there's no winning. Someone's going to be mad at you.
Yeah.
If you have the misfortune of just being kind of undecided, then everyone from both sides who feel passionately also think you're a piece of crap. So I feel very kind of defeated today. And so I'm really hoping that I can walk away from this episode feeling a little more heartened and a little less, maybe I shouldn't be that honest about all this, but maybe a little less like, God, everyone just loves to hate. We just hate. People just hate stuff. And it's just hard.
I feel like I should have read the questions because I don't know what you're talking about.
It can't surprise you that when you talk to someone about your questions about this case, that people who feel like that those questions aren't questions, or that you've misrepresented something about those questions, that upset, you know, because some people have spent much of their lives, like some people made this their job. Like some people made Delphi their job in a way that you did not make Delphi your job, and in a way that you did make Hayes' case your job. And when people just play fast and loose with facts on that case, you get really mad. So I'm just trying to be compassionate and recognize that, like, I know that, you know, there are people that listen to that were like, wait a minute, that's not exactly right at all. And that leads people into believing that this person is not guilty when I feel that the facts support his guilt. I really want to be compassionate about that because I've seen people I agree with get upset and I've seen people I vehemently disagree with get upset. And it kind of looks the same across the board.
So I'll say this without even knowing exactly, because I did see one comment and I asked for some clarification.
Yeah, and I saw that. And I appreciate that you said, I'm not trying to not talk about this, but please give me specific examples, which they did.
But I'll say that, I don't get my feelings hurt about that kind of stuff generally. Sometimes I do, to begin with. But also, like, unless I see, I'm trying to think back to the episode, because like you said, like you being like fast and loose with the facts. I thought I tried to throughout the episode, because there was no plan, no research, like that was all off the cuff. I tried to repeatedly at any point in time that I had to say, because I remember there was a one point where I said something about that, you know, there was like, it was like withheld from the defense or something. And then I checked as I was thinking that, I was like, wait, and I think I said like, wait a minute, I'm not sure I said that right. I'm not sure that's what happened. And I know, like, I got like the bullet casings backwards, and then I caught it. Like, I remembered later, and usually you don't hear me doing that because usually I prepared and researched for an episode, and I wasn't prepared for this one. So I tried to make as much clear as I could that I'm working off memory. You should fact, and also if you were listening to where I was going with the conversation and where it ended, it was not, I'm trying to convince Jim and Kathy that Richard Allen is innocent. It was,
I know that.
I'm trying to convince Jim and Kathy to research the case and do an analysis on it with all the facts. You know, I wasn't trying to form an opinion for them. What I was trying to do is get them to understand that it's not as black and white as maybe they thought it was. And it is worth their expertise in looking at it from all the facts. So it's like, if somebody's getting like mad about it, and I could be wrong. You could go and say, you said this. I'm like, oh shit, you're right. I shouldn't have said that. I don't remember doing that. I remember realizing I was not entirely sure about things and that maybe I had some things wrong, and trying to make that completely evident and clear on the episode, and correcting myself when I realized that, you know, something I said maybe wasn't accurate. And so like, I personally, I'm not, and I also always love that my friends, Zach and Janet, always get more bent out of shape if somebody says something bad about me than they do about themselves. And I'm the same way. Come at me all you want, but don't come at Zach or Janet. But for me, I'm like, I like if you're mad at me for getting something wrong there that I literally on the show said, I'm not sure that's right. Make sure you check that. That's not the same to me as stating things as absolute fact that are just completely false.
Right.
I thought it was a good discussion and I thought there was some good back and forth, but I'm with you on this, but I did feel that your discussion with them wasn't to try to persuade them one way or the other. It was try to get them to cover this on their podcast. I mean, I think you made it abundantly clear multiple times. You're like, you guys should do this. You guys should do this. And even like the behind the scenes, not that there was behind the scenes, but even like in my head, like we always talk about like how the sausage is made. You even like joked, you're like, this is like 6 episodes for you guys. Like joking, like this could create a lot of content for you. I mean, it wasn't a joke, but you know what I'm getting at here. Mm-hmm. But I felt like you were trying to, you know, push that it wasn't as clear cut as everybody expected it to be or what they just saw based on what was put out in the media. But I did truly feel like you were trying to just persuade them to cover it, to look into it themselves rather than just continue to go, he's guilty, we got him.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like the best move from here is, If I assume, Janet, what you're kind of referring to is some questions or comments that came in from listeners.
Yeah, we can break down some of that stuff.
We should go right into that because I'm literally kind of going blind. I read the one when I asked for clarification for like specifics, mm-hmm. and I remember I was like at the gym and like reading it, and I was like, there's still no specifics there. It felt like to me, unless I missed it.
Yeah, well, I have some. I mean, I'm going to try to like support some of the stuff because I agree that there were still some things that I didn't want to get into a full engagement on a post on Facebook because that's one of my least favorite things emotionally to do. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I know we've said that's not really that the follow up post is not necessarily the place for that, but we can get into it. But I do, I think again, just. I'm trying for us to all have more empathy for each other. Like, if you feel passionately about something, imagine if a podcaster that you don't care for, that you feel has misrepresented things in the past, was just loosely throwing around stuff. And it felt like to you that person had was coming from a point of a platform where they were saying, like, I'm just asking questions because it non da 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 da, or like, you know, Jamie Snow, blah, blah, blah. I'm just asking questions. Like, just maybe you should look. There's another podcast that we don't really talk about because, as we all know, there's some bad blood there that, like, is very good at saying, but don't just trust us. Like, do your research. And well,
I will push back there a minute because a lot of people don't like that. I'm just, you know, if you say you're just asking questions, but you're not. I'm not that guy. I try to take people for what they're saying. Yeah. And I get that most people do that. They're like, well, you're saying I'm just asking questions, but you're really trying to put together a narrative.
Yeah.
That other podcast you're talking about, like, I never heard once in the series that I pushed back on with them saying, never once did they go, we're just asking. What they said was,
no, that's
we
not
are the
good
definitive
person.
Final word on this case. It's over. These are facts, right? So that's a very different thing.
No, I know. I'm just saying, as a listener to that podcast, there was always a lot of like, go do your research. Like, and I think that people who are passionate about cases, again, like some of our, you know, ardent like Jamie supporters or any number of people that, you know, we feel like the work has been done. This person is not guilty. That we have, you know, people over in a different group who are just like, oh, I can always find something that I can just kind of push back into the frame. Now, I'm not saying that that's what happened here. I'm just trying, again, I'm trying to have compassion. And maybe that is a fool's errand and no one cares.
I don't think it is.
And I, you know, but we I'm just, I just know that people, I know people get upset and I keep trying to say people get upset about the things that they feel really strongly about, especially when people's lives are at stake. And that goes on both sides. If you believe that Richard Allen is the right person and you believe that every time questions get raised about this, it is painful for the family, then, you know, I understand like that to someone who ardently feels that the person who killed those girls has not been found. They feel that that is a worthwhile sacrifice because ultimately everyone has the best. Everyone still wants the right person to be in prison,
sure.
But there are just people who can't see it that way. And it's just very difficult for them emotionally. And I can't take care of those people more than I'm trying to right now. But I'm just I just want us to. And here's the other thing is I just want to. It's hard because I really believe in the work that you do. And when we're a little off on something, but it's more casual, I worry that it spills over into potential credibility for stuff that I really know you know your shit about. So that's another part of my protectiveness is like,
yeah,
I don't want us to be wrong about something that we didn't really weren't like, it's not our case. It's not something that we ardently researched. And then have a person go like, well, he also said that, you know, Richard Allen got his iPad taken away, but he actually broke his own iPad and it was given and a new one was given to him, which doesn't even happen for other inmates. So therefore, don't listen to him about this other case he's working on. Now, I don't want people to be like that, but I'm just, right. You know, I'm just trying to do whatever I can to like keep the truth out there or like to try to defend the fact that like whatever someone is going to listen to this and just hear you saying that you think Richard Allen is not guilty. I know that's not true. I do. I just am trying to underline the fact that that isn't what you were saying. And, you know, if there's like things that I can say like that, like my understanding is that he broke his own iPad and then he was actually given another one. That's different than, oh, he was deprived of this thing while he was being kept in this. Like we're still creating, it still sounds like a narrative of something that, you know, maybe we're pushing and pulling with the facts a little bit to sort of like, you know, support an argument that, you know, maybe that's not all 100% accurate. That's
yeah.
all.
So that's one, because this is my whole thing with anything like this is tell me like when the one where I said, be specific, tell me the thing I said that's wrong. I'll check it out. If I am wrong, I will correct that. I'm wrong. I was wrong about that. And what? Or I'll check it out and be like, well, I said it because of this.
Yeah.
The iPad thing, I did see that part of the comment. And
yeah, that was a different that. Yeah, that was I'll just shout out that. Yeah, that's Carrie. Carrie wanted to make sure that we, you know.
Yeah. And that and I my understanding of that. And admittedly, that came from what I believe what Bob or Andrea said that they heard at the time. I was getting that secondhand and I may have misunderstood. I didn't catch how the iPad was broken. If he broke his own iPad, I believe you. I'm sure that's it. But what I remembered was that he eventually was given another one, but not until after he confessed. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but that was the part of what I feel like it was Andrea Burkhart, but I could be wrong about that, too. Maybe it was Bob, or maybe I'm just misremembering. But it was the point I was making was that he was in like total isolation from any outside support during that time. And that's my memory. Am I wrong about about the iPad thing? Because if I am, I'm happy to admit I was wrong. That was my memory of it. He didn't have it for a while. Once after he finally, after the confessions came and stuff, and that could have just been coincidence, but that's when he was finally given, you know, a replacement iPad and so on.
Yes. I see. That's a situation where like I really, and I'm going to say one more thing. And Zach, I'm so sorry. I genuinely have been dreading this. I've been dreading this episode all day. Because I knew that I was just going to blah, like diary of the mouth. Sorry to use the D word. And that enough, I was going to make this worse. There are people who believe that Richard Allen is guilty, who also cannot conceive of the idea that Andrea and Bob might actually believe that Richard is innocent. They are so angry or so frustrated about other thoughts or moves or deeds or whatever or theories that some of those people have done that they can't imagine a scenario in which everyone genuinely believes what they're saying they believe. That it isn't like this person is a monster and they're just going, it's just a play for money or whatever. But I think when, like I did not read a transcript showing me that he was only given his iPad back after he confessed. I can only remember hearing that from people who are strongly on the side of the defense or that he is not guilty. And so I don't feel comfortable saying, yes, that's true, because I just don't have the documentation to support
so
that.
So I think the best way to handle it, and I very much appreciate what you're doing, but I mean, I think we'll end up just going on circles. We're trying to worry a lot more or discuss a lot more the way people are feeling. I think the best way to handle this going forward is just go facts point by point. I mean, I very much appreciate what you're doing, but you know, as far as that, yeah. So my position on that is, nothing that I said in that conversation or in any conversation about it is me having an agenda to try to prove something to anybody. This is not my case. I have no dog in this fight. I'm just giving my opinion based on what I know. As far as the iPad thing, if that's incorrect, then I apologize. That's incorrect. Again, I was just the point I was making was that. And by the way, it didn't really affect anything that Jim and Kathy were saying, because if you notice, in the reasons they thought he was guilty, none of those reasons were that he confessed.
Right.
That was
right.
Never even part of the conversation.
I hear you. I think it's just, again, people who passionately have researched this case or have followed the case, it just, like, you know, raises their, what are we,
hackles is the word you're looking for. Yeah.
Because they feel that each little nugget of this is like leading, is like each drop of water is building towards a sort of deluge of an opinion that feels wrong to them.
Yeah.
So the tablet thing is a thing. But and I also will say this, and then genuinely, I'm going to shut up and just read some stuff to you. I felt like Kathy was super responsible and was just like, I felt like she said very little. And yeah. I have noticed that. And I said that at the time about Kathy when they were discussing this case, because I listened to their episodes. I said, I really respect, because Jim has very strong opinions and is very vocal about them. And I have disagreed with him, and I'm sure I will again, on his opinion on certain cases, that she is very careful. And I really felt that in that conversation. She was extremely quiet. I really appreciated what she said, actually, near the top of the episode, when she said, we do the best we can with the info that they are aware of, but they also know they are not law enforcement any longer, and they do not have access right. to a lot of that stuff, and that they are subject to what the media reports or what they hear anecdotally. And that makes her uneasy. I mean, that's my takeaway from that, is that she feels a little uneasy, you know, making characterizations, or, and that she was like, I'm not going to say anything because I did not come prepared to talk about this case, but she did hear you out. And in my mind, I was like, I really respect her for just kind of like listening actively and being curious and being concerned, and also kind of just, you know, being like, and yet I didn't come here to talk about this, so I don't want to say anything that, like, I'm not sure is true, kind of thing.
And honestly, I really appreciated, and I think I said it at the end of the episode, you know, Jim's take on it, because at no point during that discussion, I never listened back to it, but from my being in the room, was he, like, arguing with me. He was, you know, he was asking questions. He was realizing, at the very least, the story he heard. And it wasn't just media. I found out later, like there were connections from people involved in the investigation that told him the big one was his bullet was found. A bullet from his gun was found between
casing. Sorry,
the word he used was bullet. That he was told that. Well, and no, it was a bullet, because it was unspent. It was the
oh,
whole
right,
bullet.
Right, yeah. right.
Was found, you know, between the victims, and it was as though it was confirmed to have come from Richard Allen's gun. So, like, you can see, like, if you put those things together, the three reasons he had was like, well, we know he was there. We know his bullet was found right there between the victims. Like, duh, that's the person. You know, I don't remember what the third one. Oh, the misleading statements that he had made.
Yeah.
You know, any one of the, you know, well, one of those in isolation, the bullet between the victims would be huge if it were, you know, he was not aware. You know, at trial that we learned that wasn't as clear cut. And I don't think anybody will argue that point. It's not as clear cut as that was his bullet from his gun, which is what was presented prior to the trial.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I know that's always something that I really hope people, even people who are sure he is guilty, can. I think there are a couple of pieces that I always think, I hope that people can concede, even if it frustrates them, like, I hope that you can understand that, taken completely independently by itself, if you tell me that he had to have ejected a casing, you know, he had to have racked it and that thing to be ejected, and that action alone could not duplicate to show that it was his, that if you can't see that is a thing that you should be able to respect, that someone like me, who kind of thinks he's guilty, but again, I am not an expert, and I'm sure people will be mad at me for saying that, I still don't like that evidence. I don't like that you had to do a test that caused you to use an item in a way that it was not used in the crime to get a result. I don't feel comfortable with that. I know there are people who do. I hope we can respectfully disagree on that. Like, that's definitely one of those issues.
Yeah, I would hope that, like you said, I hope we could at least agree that it's not as clear cut as we were led to believe.
I mean, if this were clear cut, it wouldn't be so controversial and there wouldn't be right. so many people on both sides who have very strong feelings about it, I would imagine.
I think that's part of what, you know, we've tried multitude of times to get across is, you know, I know that I'm not 100% certain either way, whether he's guilty or innocent. I for sure would love for him to be guilty if he is truly the person that did this. I want nothing more than this case to be closed. But I think there's so many of us that feel uncomfortable at the end of this trial. It's not that we believe he's innocent. I don't necessarily believe he's innocent. I don't believe he's, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. I'm uncomfortable with what has been presented to us trying to prove that he is guilty based on what we have knowledge of. And I think that that's my concern. I would love nothing more than for Richard Allen to be guilty. You know, we go back to when Bob and I found out that they had an arrest warrant for Richard Allen and they arrested him. I mean, we celebrated on the air because we literally found out on the air and we wanted nothing more. And I wanted nothing more than for them to have the person. And I still feel that way. If Richard Allen is the person, I'm glad they got him. I'm just extremely uncomfortable with what was presented at trial. You know, if that was presented against me, it feels uncomfortable. If it's presented against Bob, there's something weird about the whole case.
My whole thing is, someone who works in wrongful convictions, I just look at any of these cases from the perspective of the prosecution needs to give me evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And for me, the evidence that was presented does not prove to me that, you know, me being like, I'm uncomfortable with it means I do have reasonable doubt. And that's been my position all along. No one's ever heard me say Richard Allen's innocent. It's just, I have reasonable doubt. I have not seen strong enough evidence to convince me that that was Richard Allen who did this.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
We got to get going on some of these questions. I know we got a few.
Yeah, well, we're sort of going through and addressing them anyway. Like Jennifer and Kathy both said that, you know, they really appreciated that. I'm sorry, our Kathy, with respect to the conversation you had with Jim and other Kathy, you know, really said, like, I appreciated that this was a thoughtful discussion, that they, you know, seemed interested and not dismissive and, you know, were curious again. So I think acknowledging that from Jennifer and from Kathy. I just want to touch really quickly on Sonia's question, because I think it's a really important one. And I can tell you what I was able to find out. And if either of you or if anyone in the chat has any other information, I would welcome it. But speaking of getting things wrong, potentially, Sonia says, did you confirm that police can't lie about forensic evidence? I've never heard that before. And this is in respect to Jim saying that, as I remember it, and I didn't write it down verbatim, that the Supreme Court ruled that you cannot lie about the results of a forensic test to a suspect. I looked that up, and I do not see anywhere that that is
no,
a case.
I'm thinking that that might have been policy somewhere. I've been meaning to circle back to Jim on that because I did a ton of research. I mean, I'm just finishing my criminal justice degree. I've had multiple classes on constitutional law, and I've never heard anything like that before. The case, it was in the late 60s, I want to say like 69, Frazier versus Cupp was the case that set the precedent that police are allowed to have some level of deception in an interrogation. And really, that case and other cases have all revolved around the admissibility of a confession and the voluntariness of a confession. So that's where it comes out. So in that case, it was the suspect, the police had, I believe they had told the suspect that a co-defendant had already said that he did it when he hadn't, and then he confessed. And the Supreme Court ruled that the confession stood because if you take the kind of preponderance of all the evidence and the entirety of the circumstance, that lie didn't remove his voluntariness of the confession. So it didn't be, so they ruled it wasn't a coerced confession because of the lie, because of everything else. So it's not as clear cut as the Supreme Court said, you can lie in an interrogation. Frazier v. Cupp, set a precedent because in that case, the officer lied and the suspect confessed. They appealed that and said the confession should be thrown out because it was coerced because they lied to him. And the Supreme Court said the lie wasn't enough to cause coercion. So what that does is it then sets a precedent that says, okay, so now the law of the land is lying in an interrogation does not automatically mean that the confession becomes coerced, which in turn makes it so that law enforcement is allowed to lie or have some level of deception in their interrogations. There is no other Supreme Court case that I've been able to find that ever addresses lying specifically about forensic evidence results. However, there are several lower court decisions that did rule that way. So, you know, at the state level.
Or that you can't fake documents. Like you can't fake a forensic test and show someone a document and say, see, you can say it verbally, but you can't show someone a fake test or a fake result.
And so from my understanding of it, and I spent a lot of time researching it, it's all going to come down to and in this case, it wouldn't be relevant in Richard Allen's case anyway, because he didn't confess during that interrogation. Like this would only come up if when they said, we know your bullet was found on the scene, and he's like, okay, I did it. Then this precedent would get challenged. I think it would lose, but it would get challenged because it's already been a precedent that says they can lie, and it doesn't say anything specific about forensic evidence. But what they would look at is, did the lie push him to a point where it was no longer a voluntary confession, where they coerced him into this because of the lie? And if they looked at it and said, well, you know, he confessed because of this, this, and this, that one lie didn't cause this, that's when that would come up, that precedent would come up. But no, I mean, like I said, there are lower court rulings on that. There are departments that have policies on that. I didn't see if the FBI has a particular policy about that, but it could have been like a district court ruling in the district where he was working that had that kind of like within their district, they couldn't do it. But no, I did not find any Supreme. I believe that what he said was incorrect. I have not been able to find any sort of Supreme Court ruling that says you can't lie about forensic evidence.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm glad that we were able to address that. Hopefully that was helpful. Lauren C. and Jen also echoed that they thought that, they enjoyed the conversation. They felt that it felt very reasonable. Let's go ahead and take that to Kate, who was the person who really felt like you mischaracterized a lot of information. I paraphrased it a little bit, Kate. I hope that I'm not super misrepresenting you. I was just trying to take a little bit of the vitriol out. So sorry again, trying to lower the temperature. I just feel like I just want to back up the fact that Bob did keep saying you didn't feel strongly or at all sure that you are not guilty. And I think that does get lost on people that you even questioning it is essentially you saying that you think, you know, that you're not really saying it, but you're saying it. The conversation that you had with Jim about the description and the FBI affidavit, I thought was really interesting. Zach, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, too. I know that a lot of people, whether they agree or disagree or have no opinion whatsoever about Richard Allen, thought that that part was very interesting, talking about what the FBI might mean when they talk about build versus height, and you guys kind of going into that whole photogrammetry conversation. Zach, what did you think about that?
So I never really thought about it in the aspect of the person's build. You know, when I heard it the first time, I was thinking height, weight, size, but you don't think about that to scale. Like, I wasn't thinking about it to scale. I was thinking about it like, you know, if you said someone's my build, well, that could be Bob, right? But that's not going to be somebody that's 5'2 that's still shaped like us. I wouldn't think like that. So that's where I thought. I thought when they were talking about the build, they were talking about the overall, you know, 6'3, whatever that equals. I never had really considered the idea of scale. And I don't know that they ever got a scale. I know they talked about photogrammetry and they, oh yeah, you can put sizes in. And I know they tried to do that with like the railroad trusses to try to get some sort of scale, but I don't think they ever really got any sense of scale.
Well, it was never released. It was never released publicly. And that was one of the areas that I saw like Kate pushed back on that. It's one of the, what I was talking about earlier, like I was confused about like what the issue was with what I said, because I thought, and correct me, you guys both listened to it since I did, that I made clear, you know, because Jim asked, like it said height, and it made clear, it's like, no, it did not say height. It said that it was a similar build. And then Jim talked about what he thought build could mean for the FBI. So I don't feel like I said anything inaccurate there, but I mean, I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong, but that was one of those, I said, like there was no specifics. When I saw that list, I was like, well, I don't understand what you're upset about. I said right. Exactly what it said in the affidavit.
No, you are right. You did not say that. I think this falls into the bucket of why are we even talking about Ron Logan? For those people who feel that this is not about that he was a more viable suspect, that he wasn't a more viable suspect, and that it feels like it's just a misdirection because there was so much that wasn't right about him up to and including the fact that, you know, no one ever said the bridge guy was tall, if anything, you know. And the height thing is a real sticking point for a lot of people on both sides. And it is frustrating for a lot of people across the board. Again, people who think, yes, he is, or no, he isn't the guy, that neither side got anyone to identify him in the court, nor did they get anyone to say this person was, I would say this person was 5'6", or I would say this person was 6'2". I think the height thing is this kind of, because it's not ever mentioned, it's one of those non-facts that people can use on either side, that people will say, no, we don't have his height, and that's why, but it was said that that law enforcement strongly felt that it was a person on the shorter side, and that was very strongly believed.
That's my problem with it. They didn't. Like from my understanding, even at trial, like the range that they gave that was testified to at trial wasn't that, and I'm asking this, I'm not trying to trick anybody, I'm asking this, but my understanding was the range that was testified to at trial by law enforcement, he was outside of that range too, wasn't he?
I can't remember.
That's my memory about it. But anyway, this is, and you're being super sweet today, so I can be more of an asshole than usual. And I'm not trying.
Wasn't my goal, but okay.
that was the point, right? No, but this is my thing. Like I get like where they're coming from and where you're coming from, but I'm like, I just don't play that. I'm not playing the game where I'm uncomfortable talking about something because it doesn't fit my narrative. Like me saying that there's this thing in an FBI report that to me it indicates that this is a reason why this person might also be a suspect is make somebody uncomfortable. I'm just trying to look at all the facts, and I'm not going to like talk about a fact because it makes somebody else uncomfortable. To me, that means you're not open-minded enough, not you, Janet, but you know, whoever, like you're not open-minded enough to, you don't want to hear any of facts that are uncomfortable. I'm comfortable talking about any of the facts on either side because I don't have, it doesn't matter to me. Like I'm with Zach, and I said this on the show. My preference is that they got the right guy. I hope that's the case. I'm not saying he's innocent. I'm saying it hasn't been proven to me that he's guilty. And in me explaining why I have some of these issues, it's like, well, there's all this not evidence against him that I want to see to make me sure that I wish was there. But then also, there is this other evidence that points in another direction that makes me wonder over there. I'm not saying Ron Logan did it either, but it's like, there's these other things that I'm not going to ignore that because I want this. Like,
right.
I have to factor it all in. The way my brain works, I have to factor all that in.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I mean, I think I've made my feelings on the Ron Logan thing known, which is that, you know, I think his age and the fact that, like, if he was that great of a suspect, I think they would have charged him. Like, I don't think there's a grand conspiracy where it's like someone was friends with Ron, so they tossed that away and focused on Richard Allen, you know.
As I've said over and over again, I would love to,
it may have just been one agent's theory. You know what I mean? It may have just been one agent's theory who wrote the affidavit. And then they're like, because there's another FBI agent, I think, who like retired and just joined the case full time and was like gung-ho Richard Allen. So, you know, but that's like, I understand because you're looking at documentation and that document looks very powerful. I totally get that. I don't disagree with that. But
the thing is, we don't have all the facts. So I can only work with the facts we have. And like that affidavit is one set of facts that we have that an FBI agent wrote that here are, you know, everything about the alibi and lying about the alibi and the phone records and the phone pings, which we didn't even get into. And, you know, there's all these things like I can't ignore the, and what I've said all along, and I maintain, if I see the document, a document from the FBI that says, oh, Ron Logan was cleared because of, cool, okay.
Right.
I just haven't seen that document. So I can't, for me as an investigator, I can't say, well, I can't disregard all of that unless I see a reason to disregard it. And I haven't seen the reason to disregard it yet. I have the same qualms you do about age and all that other stuff that makes me wonder, you know, it's why I'm not like, oh, for sure it's him. Like, but for me, to me, there are elements of this case that would point to him as a suspect or a person of interest. And I've not seen any counter evidence to that, right? So I haven't seen any evidence that indicates that he couldn't have done it. So he just has to stay in that pool for me.
Right.
And I'm just not going to apologize to somebody for discussing my thoughts on evidence that exists because it doesn't fit their narrative. Right. While they're accusing me of having a narrative.
I understand. Yeah. Okay. So, and then you mentioned the jailhouse snitch letters, and I also said, you know, I understand what you're saying about the box cutter, but like the fact that those letters also say Richard Allen did it, I'm like, all right, that cancels itself out. Like I can't do anything with that. You know, that guy was Richard Allen did it with these two other guys and they used a box cutter. I'm like, I don't want to. I'm those facts cancel those things, those allegations and the fact that he's a jailhouse snitch. To me, I'm just like, I'm pretty across the board. Like, I'm not taking that seriously, but I hear you.
To be fair with that, like, and I meant that was one of the things I meant and I didn't get around to. And I apologize for that because I wanted to like reread because there was two, right? There was multiple letters written by Reese, I think.
Yeah, there was three. I believe it's three
of them. Yeah. And I'm the same with you. It's a jailhouse snitch. It's come through. But what I try to look at through the lens of, which is, you know, to someone, some side may think this, I'm trying to like push some agenda, is he's saying that all the information he has, and the only place he could have got the information is either he made it up, got on the news, or what he says, where he says he got it, which is directly from Ron Logan. So there is what appears to be guilty knowledge that he has. As far as the big one for me, like the box cutter could, you know, take it or leave it because we don't know for sure it was a box cutter. But the fact that no one knew their throats were slit and that's in there, like to me, I can't ignore that. And now that could be a guess. It could be a fluke. It could be whatever. I'm not saying it's fact, but it's something to consider that we know for a fact he didn't get that information from Richard Allen, right? Richard Allen wasn't in jail with him. Ron Logan was. So the one thing that's in there that really caught my attention was the manner of death is in there, is something that no one should have known at that time. So that's important. Now, it wasn't the first letter. I shouldn't even say it because I don't know, and you probably don't remember either.
Because I
feel like it was like in a subsequent letter later. My memory is, and I could be completely wrong about this, that Richard Allen came into the letters after Richard Allen was arrested. Does that ring a bell to you? Or if not, then disregard that completely, because I don't recall.
I don't remember, and I don't have that in front of me, that specific question.
Yeah, I know there's some people in chat. I know, like, Lynn in chat. So, Lynn, let me know about that in chat, because I know you have a better grasp on the case than I do.
I really wish that Murder Sheet, I know you're going to hear about this, and I just wish that you guys would talk to Bob, because I don't, they wrote a book on it, and I know people discount the book, but to me, that seemed like such a perfect example of, like genuinely, like, heart in the right place. Like, yeah, because I don't want to misrepresent, like, you know, information that I don't have right in front of me that they also reported on. And I wasn't even going to say their name, because I felt like we have listeners who hear that name and they just shut down, the same way that people hear Bob Ruff's name who listen to other podcasts and shut down because they've just made a decision.
I don't know them. I don't have any issue with them at all. Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining, if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Thank you. Zachary, just real quick. Zach, are you trying to find that affidavit information while we're going on here?
Yeah, I have the letter pulled up. The date on the letter looks like 2/28/25, at least when it's put into Carroll County, the one that mentions Richard Allen.
That's what I thought. The original letter was 2017, right? The original first letter that he wrote.
That's what I'm trying to...
We'll let you keep... If you find the answer, let us know, but we'll keep moving on in the meantime while you're looking.
Yeah, I mean, and then the piece about him saying he didn't want anything. I just feel like we've come across that way too many times in our cases. Like, they're like, and he didn't even want anything. And it's like, how sure are we about that? You know. Real quick, I'm just going to take a look at the Kate thing. Oh, the white van. There's still just a lot of disagreement about whether or not Walla could have led him to say that. I know we have heard from people like Bob and Andrea and Michael. Why am I blanking? I'm so nervous.
Michael Osbrook.
It's been proven that the conversation about the white van was in chats that, you know, she was a group she was a part of. I don't have that firsthand information, and I just don't feel comfortable saying that I know for certain that, like, he had that he could have been fed the information about the white van. I just don't feel comfortable with that. To me, that feels like I've only heard that from the side of people arguing on Richard's behalf. And I understand their passion. And to be clear, I do. And maybe I'm an idiot, but I genuinely believe that the people who say he's not guilty really believe it. And maybe that's naive of me, but I really believe that they think that and that they feel that passionately as people do that he's guilty.
Yeah. And to be clear, like, that information too, for me, comes from those three attorneys. So it could be incorrect because, you know, I wasn't at the trial. I don't have the transcripts. I haven't, you know, I haven't seen all that. So that's a good caveat to put on that. You know, well, I guess it doesn't matter. I was going to say, to have all three of these lawyers who, you know, like Andrea and Bob are content creators too, so people maybe wonder about some bias on there. Michael Osbrook is not. Michael Osbrook, you know, he's just now, you know, starting. He's not getting paid anything. He doesn't have a podcast. Like, he is a highly, highly, highly respected attorney who's been doing this for close to 30 years. For him to say something is facts that he's seen in evidence and just be lying about it, I just have a hard time imagining that's the case.
Yeah, I that's fair. Yeah, I that's fair. I don't have anything.
And by the way, that's not to suggest that I think that Bob or Andrea are. I'm just like,
you're just trying to kind of help strip away reasons that people give.
Yeah.
Once we get into the, like, this person is a content creator, then things get a little messy because there are just so many of them, and people's level of ethics there's a wide range in content creation. You know what I mean? It's like there are people who started in the right place, and there are people who absolutely there aren't. But that's a wide range. The Walla stuff, I think that, you know, there's a sense of just questioning the, you know, how right or wrong Walla, again, depending on which side you fall on. I feel conflicted about her because, again, if that's another piece of evidence like the gun, where all I can say is I really wish that it hadn't felt like it was a violation or that it was bad practice to be in Facebook groups and to be interested in true crime, whether she disclosed it or not. I mean, I don't think it's cool for her supervisors, if she did disclose it, to be like, yeah, go ahead. But
well,
I also
she got fired for lying to them.
Right. But, like, what I thought was very interesting on the stand, and this is, like, testimony I listened to personally with my own ears, is that I think it's really confusing that in, like, every indication I got from listening to her speak and even the question she was asked by both sides was it sounded like she was, like, kind of advocating for him. Like, it felt to me like she actually was, like, really interested in other suspects and kind of was, like, violating like the practice that could go towards the prosecution, but, like, also violating, like, him, like, being out of his mind and trying to confess to her and her saying, like, please don't confess to me. I'm not comfortable with this. Like, I just don't know if my sense of, like, her testimony didn't necessarily match 100%, and maybe I'm misremembering, but it didn't necessarily match 100% just the, like, dyed in the wool, like, well, she planted his confession. That was fake. I just wish we would have had a recording of it. I wish that I could feel more strongly about her as a witness in either direction, but because that is another thing I'm very uneasy about is like, I have to throw her away too, which I feel terrible about.
The whole situation is just, with her is just wonky. It's just, but you know, you come down, you look at her reports, or my memory is that her reports state that, you know, when he confessed that she said he was in a state of psychosis. Like there's like I don't. That, really,
I'm
that's
not
my
sure
point.
That's yeah. I can't be sure that that's what her reporting, how it matches up with when he was.
I feel like if I was wrong about that, then Kate or somebody would have called me out on that. Because I'm pretty positive about that. Because that's one thing that I remember. Like, we can cut through all the she shoulda, didn't, and she's a her character this or that. You can cut through all that. The point is, was he in a sane state of mind when this happened? And her reports that he was in a state of, I believe she diagnosed him as being in psychosis. Zach, you look like you found something.
Yeah, the first letter was June of 2017. That's the one that mentions Ron Logan. The second letters are in 2024, and they mention Richard Allen and Keegan Klein. And we, you know, I think everybody's on board with the fact that Keegan Klein is a scumbag, but not part of this murder.
Yeah. So my point there is when they mention the letters say that you mentioned Richard Allen too, the original letter in 2017, a couple months after the crime was committed, was Ron Logan told me this, and that's where we get the throat slit with the box cutter. You get the, you know, what again appears to be guilty knowledge or a real good guess. That's that stuff comes in. It's not until after Keegan Klein's in the news and Richard Allen's been arrested in the news that they become part of the narrative. And you can do with that whatever you want. But I guess that's my counter to that is I'm looking at what did he say in 2017?
Mm-hmm.
And there was guilty knowledge in that letter. And that's concerning to me.
Got it.
You know, the fact that 7 years later, after they've made an arrest, then all of a sudden the guy they arrested becomes part of the narrative. You know, that's not as relevant to me because that information could have come from anywhere. Where the information came from in 2017 that their throats were slit, that's the part that has my attention.
Okay. Yep.
Just as an unbiased investigator, if I see that, if I'm the detective on the case, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. How did they know that?
Totally.
And yep, also, just to go back really quick, the original description is the person depicted in the composite sketch is described as a white male between 5'6 and 5'10, weighing 180 to 220, reddish brown hair. Eye color is unknown. The suspect is believed to be 18 to 40 years old and may appear younger.
18, 5'6". And how tall was Richard Allen?
He's like 5'5 or 5'6".
So anyway, we got to buzz through them. I'm already past my heart out, so we got to buzz through these.
That's it. I mean, again, I wanted to play devil's advocate. I did the best job I could. I really welcome people who are more versed with this case to come and like have a real conversation with you. I really believe in you, Bob, and I just want the truth. That's all. And I know you do too.
Yeah,
that's the best I can do.
Lynn says in the chat that he was 5'4". And what'd you say the description was 5'6 to 5'10"? Which again,
5'6 to 5'10".
That doesn't mean, oh, it says 5'6 and he's 5'4". To me, as a criminal, I can say in 2 weeks, I can say as a criminologist.
Right. Yeah.
You know, looking at it practically speaking, like when someone says 5'6 to 5'10, like I'm hearing average height to slightly below average is what someone's thinking, right? Like 5'10 is an average height. Yeah. 5'6 is getting on the short side. He 5'4" is a very short person. And again, that does, I don't know. Again, I'm defaulting to Lynn. I know Lynn has studied the case way more than I have. Also, Purple Merrill's above them said 5'4 or 5'5, and then Lynn said 5'4. But if that's the case, that was my memory too, that he was in like the real low fives.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, and again, this doesn't, this is not like facts, hard evidence you should take to the bank, but I'm always trying to make you guys understand how I'm thinking, because everybody's always like taking what I'm saying and then telling me what I'm thinking. So that's why I try to spend some time telling you what I'm thinking. Like the way I think about this is, okay, if somebody is 5'4", most people are going to see them and say, that was a short person. That was a very short person. A 5'4" man is a short person. I would have a hard time thinking someone would walk past somebody who's that short, 5'4", and saying they could have been up to 5'10", because a 5'10" is you know almost my height. That's a you know that's a very average to above average. Whereas 5'6" is on the lower end of that. So it's just I don't look at those numbers, but and it's just always something that I have stored in the back of my head. Something like that, like they're you know when they say 5'6" to 5'10", you're saying okay, they're average, maybe a little under average.
Right.
He's very short. It's also worth pointing out, Ron Logan was 6'3", I think.
He's super tall.
Yeah, like and again, really, it'd be the same thing with him, right? If I saw somebody 6'3", and let's say that let's say they were like they were 5'8" to 6'1", and Ron Logan's 6'3", I wouldn't be like, he's 2 inches out of the range, he doesn't count,
right?
But I would be thinking, well, they just described an average size person to maybe slightly above average, but if you walk past Ron Logan, you're like, that's a tall motherfucker. Like he's 6'3". Right. He's tall.
It's also
right?
easier to be confused to be tall. Again, this is semantics, and we're going to get off of this call. I mean, this chat. But it's. I think it's easier for a person to wear like you know boots, and then suddenly you're 2 inches taller. But it's harder to like be 6'3" and have someone be like, "Oh, I thought he was about 5'8", 5'10", you know, whatever. And also, you know what? Eyewitness. That's really tough. We all know this. Eyewitness testimony is really tough, and that is. I'm sure a reason why neither side elected to get deep in the weeds about identifying Richard Allen. The most that, you know, you can say is that the witnesses said, I saw the guy that is in the video. I saw that guy. I saw him. I saw that guy. It's the guy from the video. Whether or not they can identify that as Richard Allen or not, you know, didn't happen on either side, to my knowledge. You know, but the eyewitness thing question. Is already, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's all just, so I'll end with this. If you're really listening to me and paying attention and give a shit what I'm saying or thinking, what I'm not trying to trick anybody. I'm not being coy. What I'm really saying is, I went into this, and Zach can attest to this. We sat at dinner with Bob Mata, and as the trial was starting, and he was explaining all the reasons why he thought he was innocent, and what was I saying, Zach?
That you. I'm trying to remember exactly how you phrased it, but you were like, you have to show it to me. You have to prove it to me because this is not, I do not feel this way. Like they're saying they have evidence against him.
I said, no, there's way too much evidence against him. If not him, then who? Mm-hmm. I don't buy it. I didn't go into this like, I want to prove he's innocent. I didn't go into this trying to like agree with Bob Mata, who I consider a friend, right? I went into it thinking, nah, you're wrong. He's probably guilty. And then the trial happened. And then when I heard the evidence, not just from them, but I was also following all the local news reporting on it. I was trying to get as much outside information as I could besides from, you know, friends of mine that were there covering it. I was just my overall position is very simple. That case, the evidence presented did not prove to me beyond a reasonable doubt. I have reasonable doubt that Richard Allen is the guy. And that's as far as the strength of my opinion goes on the matter. And I keep talking about it because I think it's tragic. I want to know more. I want to know that we got the right person or find the right person. It's important to me. And so I'm always willing to talk about it. If the murder sheet, if they want to come on, I said, I don't have any problem with that. I don't know them at all. I would love to have a conversation with someone who is adamantly convinced that Richard Allen is guilty so I can pick their brain and be like, well, explain this to me. You know, it's not, I'm not trying to debate or fight with anybody. I want the facts. So long story short, I'm glad we had the conversation. I'm always open to having the conversation again. I'm certain it's not the last time that we're going to talk about this case. If you're, and again, this is where Janet was nice enough for me to be a dick. I'm sorry if you're butthurt about me, you know, talking about elements of the case that are inconvenient for your narrative. I'm sorry. And I'm not calling about any particular person individual. I'm talking about the imaginary person that Janet is speaking to, right? She is much kinder to me than that. I don't have time to get my feelings hurt because someone's mad at me about something I'm saying about this. Because things are very easy for me. If I say something that is incorrect and you tell me it's incorrect and I see that it's incorrect, I will admit I am wrong. I will correct it and I will apologize.
I've heard you do it. I know it.
If you come at me and you're like, well, I don't like the way something was characterized and you shouldn't talk about this or talk about that, I don't, you're free to have that opinion. I just don't care. And I think that's a wonderful, kind way for me to end. I love you
hey,
all.
Hey, what's going on next week?
I hope you talk about it.
This is going to go down as my personal worst follow-up in history because I just feel like I failed on every level.
You
whatever.
Did not.
I
did.
It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just like a person who likes talking about this with everyone.
This goes like this. This goes, the comments are, Jana is so sweet and Bob's such a jerk. You did great. I appreciate you saying everything that you
also,
said. I really
so
do.
It's so hot in here. I feel like I'm sweating under like a, I feel like I'm in an interrogation room with a hot light on me. I am soaked in sweat right now.
Yeah. So no, in all seriousness, I love you for everything you said. It needed to be said. I'm glad you were there to say it because I certainly wouldn't have just because I'm just not as nice as you. Moving on to this week. To this week, we are going to hear from and you're going to get in the Throwback Thursday episode an old conversation with Justine Vanderloon, who I had on years ago when she released her podcast, Believe Her, which is an incredible podcast. You should go listen to it. She has a new book being released on June 2nd. It's called Unreasonable Women. And it's really good. I got an advanced copy of the book. I'm almost through it now. I wasn't quite as far into it when I got to talk to her on what day did we talk? Monday, I think. I don't remember. All my days are blending together. Awesome conversation with Justine. That'll be this Sunday. Yeah. And we'll talk all about that next week, probably Tuesday next week. Follow up. I remember how this goes. Have a happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. I love y'all.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.